from deep inside your radio.
Get back, Jojo. I propose nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, 5 days into a week-long auction on eBay, there appears to be less appetite than expected for the auction offer of lunch with Rupert Murdoch. I'm so sad to be the bearer of these tidings. The auction isn't going as well as anticipated. The unprecedented charity auction, offering a chance to dine with Rupert, has raised just about $75 more than its reserve price, with just 2 days left to go. It may be too late already, as I tell you this. I don't know which way to hope on that one. The auction is in aid of the Jerusalem College of Technology. Has a reserve price of $25,000, has attracted only two bidders. I feel guilty. I mentioned this on the air when it first was announced, but I thought, doggone it. Just for grudge matches alone, there'd be plenty of people. No. The first bid is for the reserve price. The second, from Norman Rentrop, I'd try spelling that backwards, offers just $100 more. The bidder may or may not be German publisher Norman Rentrop, a chairman of the, well, this would be the translation of the name of the company, publishing house for the German business world, who owns 14% of a German football club as well. If he's successful, he and four friends will take lunch with Murdoch in News Corp's private executive dining room in New York. Why the Jerusalem College of Technology is the chosen charity? You might ask. Murdoch has established links with the Israeli high-tech industry news corporation subsidiary NDS, which develops the firm's satellite encryption software, has offices in the country. So there may be time, there may not be time, at ebay.com/Rupert Murdoch. I didn't say /Rupert Murdoch. That was just a URL to bid for. Could we raise some... Ladies and gentlemen, if there was ever a reason to give, if there was ever a time, now is not that time. Hello, welcome to the show.
cat sleeping in the sun. Eyes take heed, the colors call. Sunlight patterns touch the wall. Red kerchiefs sail and fall. Cat is sleeping in the sun. Dragon kite in the sky. Wheel and turn, spin and fly. Attacked by rooks who never fail to cry the sound of fairy tale. The cat is walking in the sun. All the pebbles I have seen, precious stones for Colleen. Every minute I pass through with the groovy spent with you. The cat is yawning in the sun. Jeweled castles I have built with freak feelings of guilt, and the word stabbed to the hilt. Pick the flower and it will wilt. Cat shifting in the sun. The marionette dangles dead. Insensitivity is fed by the TV wizard's wand. Worst in the spell you're con. Cat smiling in the sun. Cat smiling in the sun. Eyes take heed, the colors call. Sunlight patterns touch the wall. Red kerchiefs sail and fall. Cat smiling into me.
From the home of the homeless, from the edge of America, I'm Harry Shearer, celebrating the return of the cat and welcoming you to this edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, I've long thought that the mere fact that as men grow older, they stop growing hair on the top of their heads and start growing it on their shoulders and out of their ears is sufficient argument against the premise of intelligent design. But here's more. Dateline Virginia Beach, Virginia. Religious broadcaster Pat Robertson this week warned residents of a rural Pennsylvania town that disaster may strike there because, quote, they voted God out of their city by ousting school board members who favored teaching intelligent design. All 8 Dover, Pennsylvania school board members up for re-election were defeated after trying to introduce intelligent design. The belief that the universe is so complex that it must have been created by a higher power as an alternative to the theory of evolution. Here's what Reverend Pat said, quote, I'd like to say to the good citizens of Dover, if there is a disaster in your area, don't turn to God. You just rejected him from your city. God is tolerant and loving, but we can't keep sticking our finger in his eye forever. If they have future problems in Dover, I recommend they call on Charles Darwin. Maybe he can help them. Unquote. So God has an eye you can stick a finger in. This just in. Thank you, Pat Robertson, for being argument number 1A after hair growing out of the ears. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's get scared. This year is shaping up, according to the Australian newspaper The Age, to being the hottest year since records began in Australia. The past decade had unusually hot years, but 2005 is the one climatologists are watching closely. The record year, 1998, had the El Nino of the century. This year could exceed that benchmark without an El Nino. The Australian Bureau of Meteorology says the first 10 months of 2005 were the warmest period since monthly records began in 1950 and probably would be the hottest year since annual records began in 1910. Climate scientists are picking up a similar trend globally. The record-breaking temperatures, according to the Australian Meteorological Bureau, are an indicator of climate change. Well, what... This really emphasizes how pervasive global warming actually is, says David Jones, head of climate analysis at the Bureau's National Climate Center. Greg Hunt, federal Australian parliamentary secretary for the environment, says there's a clear temperature trend over the past decade. We need to work on cause and effect, on reducing carbon dioxide emissions and on increasing water conservation and water recycling, he said. That's from the Australian government, which supports the war in Iraq. So they're not, my point is clearly just that they're not flaming liberals. Or they're flaming liberals who support the war in Iraq. The warmth was not characterized by major heat waves down under. Rather, the warmth crept up almost without people noticing, much like Rupert Murdoch himself. Hey, let's have lunch. Rup. It was a record warm winter in southern Australia. Below average snowfalls, the warmest September for 125 years all over the world. Changes in timing of seasonal activities in plants and animals, and a remarkable run of warm nights in Australia. But that's just Australia. They're not on this planet, are they? It's hard to see. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's been too long and yet not long enough. The apologies of the week are next.
So sorry.
Dateline Honolulu, a Roman Catholic priest accused of sexually assaulting a 15-year-old seminarian on Oahu nearly 30 years ago apologized as a lawsuit filed by the now 44-year-old victim was about to go to trial. Timing. After initially denying the allegation, Reverend Joseph Bukowski III acknowledged harming Eugene Solibio, who did not continue to become a priest. Oh, I'm truly sorry for all you've gone through and suffered as a result of my actions. I should have apologized much sooner, Bukowski said in a letter. Solibio accepted the apology. He filed the lawsuit in 2003, claiming Bukowski gave him drugs and alcohol and then sexually assaulted him. Under the settlement, Bukowski is to pay Solibio $50 a month for the next 10 years. And as part of the settlement, Bukowski won't be allowed to work with young people again. $50 a month, ladies and gentlemen. It's worth even less in Hawaii. Deadline Sacramento, when the Detroit Pistons were introduced before Tuesday night's game, the Arco Arena scoreboard flashed images of abandoned buildings, burned-out cars, nearly every outdated offensive stereotype of Detroit. Most of the Pistons didn't see the display, but they went out and wrecked the Sacramento Kings home opener anyway. The Kings quickly apologized for the scoreboard montage. The Detroit players didn't hear about it until after they got to the dressing room. Says Detroit coach Flip Saunders, it's not called for. There's no excuse for that. Whoever did that owes us an apology. Well, he got it. John Thomas, president of Maloof Sports and Entertainment, owner of the Kings, says he doesn't know who was responsible for the video, but promised immediate discipline. It was a terrible mistake, he said. That's not how we do things. We apologize to the great Detroit organization and to the city of Detroit. There's no explanation. It was a mistake, and it won't happen again, unquote. More from Australia. Australian model Michelle Leslie testified at her trial this week and apologized for her drug-related arrest after Bali court heard she had occasionally used ecstasy. Bali psychiatrist Dr. Denny Thong, I don't write this, I read it. Bali psychiatrist Dr. Denny Thong told District Court Leslie the model had taken ecstasy to overcome stress and anxiety caused by a teenage breakup with her parents. In her testimony, 24-year-old Leslie told the court she had not known the two pills of ecstasy were in her handbag that night that she was arrested by Bali police at a rave party. Yeah, you would take what? Anison to a rave party? She said the pills were given to her by a mysterious friend named Mia, who has since disappeared. Mia told her that the tablets were medicine to help her with her anxiety attacks, said Leslie, who apologized. Dateline, Pennsylvania. Harrisburg, as a matter of fact, in an abrupt U-turn, the leader of the state Senate called the legislative pay raise he helped pass this summer a mistake, apologized to his constituents for adopting it late at night without public notice, and vowed to repeal it next week. Senate President Pro Tem Robert Jubilierer, Republican of Altoona, told reporters he recently realized the public's anger over the pay raise wasn't going away and that the issue had become a serious liability. pointing to the failure of state Supreme Court Justice Russell Nigro to retain his seat. Jubilee said there was an anger level by the constituency that I'd never seen in 31 years in the Senate. Well, so you better apologize, sir. More Catholic apologies? Sure. Dateline Rome, Italy's leading Catholic magazine, apologized to its readers this week for running an ad with a woman's naked backside. Famiglia Cristiana sparked a minor controversy last week when it ran a full-page ad for an air ventilation company that featured a woman's nude rear in a steamed-up glass shower stall. That's good ventilation. If you want to see clearly, call your electrician now, read the line in the ad. The Italian media said the ad broke a taboo and indicated a change in course for the Catholic Weekly, the most read magazine in Italy, partly because it's given away free in churches. Ah, I get it. On Tuesday, Famiglia Cristiana's editor, the Reverend Antonio Sciortino, apologized for the ad and said the magazine's family-focused mission remained intact. Modesty and chastity are important values for us, which we don't renounce, he said, in a note that was to appear free in Wednesday's issue. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Not too many. We can handle that. It's a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm still here. Don't worry about it. I'm just getting a little breeze from the fan. You can hear the fan in the distance. And no, it's not a stalker. It's an actual fan. Sure, it's November and we need a fan. Why would that be? Because it's public radio. So, on this very evening, as you're hearing this, as I'm doing this broadcast, I have no idea when you're hearing it now in the world of podcasting, 60 Minutes will broadcast for the first time a piece by Dan Rather since he rejoined 60 Minutes after having, of course, left the anchor chair of the CBS Evening News in March. An early resignation, most people believe, was associated with the problems of the story about President Bush's National Guard service and the documents used in that story, which CBS, it turns out, could not authenticate. Coincidentally, Mary Mapes, the producer of that story, who was fired by CBS, is out with a new book this week and is going on all the talk shows to re-argue the case that story was actually well-founded and that CBS buckled under to pressure in firing her and in forcing out Dan Rather. But there's more news about Dan Rather than that. This is quoted by an online magazine called Radar. According to sources inside CBS, Rather recently got into a shouting match with Mike Wallace after Wallace told Rather he should have resigned over that incident. While the two men were standing side by side at urinals, ladies and gentlemen. The argument erupted in a men's room at CBS headquarters in New York after Wallace sidled up to Dan Rather and told him Wallace had just confided to Katie Couric on a Today Show interview that he thought Rather should have resigned when Mary Mapes and her associates were fired. They were both standing at the urinals when Wallace casually mentioned what he had told Katie, says the source. There preceded a 20-minute shouting match in the bathroom between Rather and the 87-year-old Wallace. Reached for comment, Wallace confirmed that a discussion had taken place. Quote, I don't remember whether it was in a men's room, he said, but called the notion the tempers flared BS. Quote, I said to Dan, and I told him that I said this to Katie, did it never occur to you that after the people who worked with you were fired that you might have resigned in sympathy with them, Wallace said. And he replied, yes, it did occur to me, and we had a very pleasant, straightforward conversation about it. Dan and I are friends, Wallace continued, and I figured whatever I said to Katie, if he were to see it on the air for the first time without having heard it from me, he would be upset. Therefore, I felt it was important that I let Dan know what I had said. There were no fights. He's a much younger and bigger and stronger man than I. Rather, could not be reached for comment by press time. Wallace had previously, in a New Yorker interview, called Rather uptight and occasionally contrived on the air and said he didn't find him as satisfying to watch as other network anchors. that report on Dan and Mike from a while ago, a week or so ago. Things may have changed since Dan got his piece. The piece, by the way, is a profile of CNBC financial talk show host James Cramer, host of Mad Money. That's the piece that Dan Rather has on 60 Minutes tonight. That very fact may improve his mood should this be another day, bad day in the BlackRock men's room.
Ow.
You come and ride in my beautiful bull. Oh, excuse me, please.
Hello, Daniel.
No, I'm fine. I'll come back in 2 twitches of a gator's tongue.
Brother Rather, come on. There's plenty of room here at the bar. No hard feelings.
Kind of a personal question in the circumstances, Brother Wallace, but let's just say the normal coffee and the celebration champagne are calling this square dance.
Ooh, what were you celebrating? The release of Mary Mape's book?
No, sir. My report, Making Air on 60.
Oh, I really am out of the loop. Well, I'd shake your hand, but...
No, give me a Fort Worth rain check on that hoss. Yes, sir. My profile of CNBC's Jim Cramer on the full network. Football overrun protected.
Nice.
Yes, sir. So, maybe it isn't hill, country, highway twisted to think that I shouldn't have resigned after all.
Oh, Daniel, you're not serious.
Sir, please, if I were any less serious, I wouldn't be standing here still trying to prime the pump, running drier than the braces in July. Just give me a second here, Oz.
Now okay?
Yes, sir.
Surely you're not saying that doing our standard boilerplate puff piece about an over-caffeinated talking head on a 2-bit cable channel somehow wipes away everything that happened and didn't happen last year? I'd prefer to think you weren't saying that.
Well, of course I wasn't saying that, sir. No way in hell would I ever call it boilerplate. It's a good, tough, take-no-prisoners, scuff-up-your-wallabies personality profile of the kind that made Ed Murrow proud when he did them. On person to person.
Well, the same kind I used to do that you once referred to as styrofoam popcorn packaging for my old gold commercials.
It's a piece that shows the Jim Cramer that doesn't yell like a prairie dog on hot asphalt. The Jim Cramer that isn't always thinking about money. The Jim Cramer that...
The Jim Cramer that even people who care about Jim Cramer don't care about. Look, Daniel, you're not only younger and stronger than I am, you may even be smarter. Don't you get the message our fearless leaders are sending you? You've been to what? Afghanistan twice this year? Half of the Middle East working on stories? Am I right?
I burned up some jet fuel, yes, sir.
And the only story of yours that makes air is some crosstown piffle about Jim Hoosis that Leslie Stahl's brother-in-law could have whipped out in his spare time. CBS to Brother Rather, drop dead.
Michael, sir, I'm sorry. I was so full of my own self, I didn't think to congratulate you.
On what?
On your book-plugging exploits. Excellent Larry King, superb Katie Couric.
Thank you.
You knew just how to swing at Brother King's softballs.
Thank you.
And, of course, the father-son interview with Chris. Well, sir, I mean, it humanized the crap out of Fox.
Well,
it was a kind of family reunion show Brother Povich would eat raw gopher scat to have on his broadcast.
You know, if I was going to be ashamed about anything in the book-plugging department, Brother Rather, it might be about married mapes going on, Brother King, and reminding everyone once again just why the anchor chair that once had the Rather's Chair Do Not Move sign on it is now gathering dust in a Viacom warehouse in Parsippany.
They moved it? I thought Brother Schieffer was...
Daniel, look, amigo, I'm in an age where still being able to say I'm Mike Wallace on national television without drooling is worthy of a Peabody. But you could still be doing, I don't know, History Channel, National Geographic Channel, you know, distinguished things that former anchors do in their former anchor years.
Or I could be like Bruce Morton, go over and do thumbsuckers for a cable news channel, not pulling a big enough paycheck to buy a decent set of dentures. Yes, sir, I could do a number of things. I could skin possums at the county fair, now that I think of it.
You know, Daniel, having my own son take precious seconds away from talking about my book to quiz me on the politics of a story that only aired because you taped the narration to it wasn't exactly the most thrilling thing to happen to me this week.
Bruce Wallace, Mary Mapes has her book to sell. You've got your book to sell. All I've got to sell is good old-fashioned teeth-in-the-trousers journalism. I guess we'll know who's buying what before it's springtime in Aransas. Meantime, I believe I'll start taking former anchor privilege.
What, you gonna have your I'm come first on the broadcast? I thought that...
I believe I'll be using the handicap washroom from now on. You take care, Brother Wallace.
You too, Brother Rather.
He was a man on duty, and as he started to me, there was a wink in his eye. Oh, I don't want to knock it, but with money in my pocket, I was ready just to buy. And with the swag of his shoulder, he started to get bolder. He was Spanish fly to me. Well, I'm not cruel as a rule, but I called him a fool and I walked on by. There's a one every morning, two born every evening, they send me sky high. I keep hoping I'm mistaken, hoping I'm just dreaming, they send me sky high. There's one every morning, one born every evening, they send me sky high. I was acting like a hedonistic art queen. When a man made of leather started acting like my lover, I was in the middle of a bad dream. And when he touched me on the arm and he told me to keep calm, I screamed in his face. Well, I'm a bitch when there's an itch, and with a stitch in my stomach, I ran from that place. There's a one every morning, two born every evening, they send me sky high. I keep hoping I'm mistaken, hoping that I'm dreaming, they send me sky high. There's a one every morning, two born every evening, they send me sky high. Call me old-fashioned, but I really get impassioned When some fool gets me sky high, I don't fondle or fold me, couch me or cajole me. Don't cross that line, 'cause I'm buying and I'm telling, and as long as you're selling, we'll do fine. There's one every morning, two on every evening, listen me, sky high. I keep hoping I'm mistaken, hoping that I'm dreaming, they send me sky high. There's one every morning, two on every evening, listen me, sky high. I keep hoping I'm mistaken, hoping that I'm just dreaming, dreaming. They send me sky high. Oh, they send me, they send me sky, and they send me, they send me,
This is Le Show, ladies and gentlemen, and the number of new recruits who scored at the bottom of the Army's aptitude test tripled last month. Running that by again, the new recruits who scored at the bottom of the aptitude test, that number of recruits tripled. We're scraping the bottom, literally. Pentagon officials said that, helping the nation's largest armed service meeting its October recruiting goal, but raising concerns about the quality of the force. Former Army Secretary Thomas White said the service was making a mistake by lowering its standards. Quote, I think it's disastrous. You're throwing the towel in on recruiting quality. Unquote. He was fired by Donald Rumsfeld in 2003 over other policy differences. Quote, we have a clear experience from the 1970s with recruiting a sizable number of people from the lowest mental categories, said White. It led to training and discipline problems then, he added. To achieve last month's recruiting targets, 12% of those accepted by the Army had the lowest acceptable results. They scored between 16 and 30 points out of a possible 99. That is to say, they got credit for having the pencil pointing in the right direction toward the paper. On an aptitude test that quizzes potential soldiers on general science, you remember him, he commanded the mathematics and word knowledge.
Word knowledge. Yeah, I know what the word knowledge means. It means word know.
And on a related matter, although we don't have the Reading the Trades theme music this week, so here's what it would sound like if I read the trades for you without that music. Ooh, I don't know if I can do this. But I am going to read the trades for you from Advertising Age. The bobble. The bobble and the belt of the advertising business. U.S. Army to drop Army of One advertising campaign. I guess because one is too high a score. Well, I don't know. I'll read it for you. Regardless of who ultimately wins the long-sought U.S. Army advertising account, and I have been reading pieces from Ad Age on this subject of the Army advertising account for 2 years now, ladies and gentlemen. One thing is for certain, the Army of One campaign is getting discharged. As U.S. Army recruiting suffers in the face of the war in Iraq, Leo Burnett in Chicago is retreating from the line it used to win the business in 2000. And the Publicis Group, vying to defend the $200 million account now that's being put up for review to see if other advertising agencies could do it better, they're moving away from the Army of One message in trying to keep the business. assuring that the controversial line is due to be retired. An Army spokesman said there were no plans to change the Army slogan. That's consistent with the Army's public information policy. The line has been criticized since it was first unveiled, with critics arguing it undermined the notion of the Army as a team. Denunciations fell flat at the time as the Army met its recruiting goals, even amid fighting in Afghanistan and early fighting in Iraq. That changed last year as the increasingly bloody guerrilla war raged on. The Army missed its fiscal 2005 recruiting target of 80,000 recruits by nearly 7,000, be about 10%, just 9%, between 9 and 10%. As recruiting suffers and the war continues, the slogan has been fodder for late-night talk shows and was ridiculed on a recent episode of the sitcom Arrested Development. I wouldn't worry about that, Army. Show's being canceled. Leo Burnett agency has been evolving the campaign away from reliance on the Army of One Line for some time. For example, recent work carries the tagline, "Strength for now, strength for later," with Army of One tacked on. That's a good line. Strength for now, strength for later. I might go up for that commercial. And also from Advertising Age, the $515 million spent on this year's election, a record for an off-year election, will pale compared to the predicted outlay for next year, a midterm election that could reach the lofty $1.7 billion spent during the presidential election year of 2004. It's the only sector of the advertising economy that's growing, unquote. Evan Tracy, chief operating officer of TNS Media Intelligence Campaign Media Analysis Group. Hey, Evan, your company doesn't have a long enough name. Work on that. He said political spending next year is likely to top $1.4 billion. Could easily beat the $1.7 registered in 2004. Expected to fuel the increases the number of big state governor races, including California. Hey, too bad, Arnie. Next time, pick on nurses your own size. Already more than a dozen candidates are on the air with ads for next year. And next year's outlays could also be further bolstered by efforts of prospective 2008 presidential candidates to aid campaigns in primary states. Both parties are going to make an aggressive effort to retake the Senate and the House, Tracy said. In addition, campaign contribution limits have more than doubled since the last midterm election. The $515 million spent this year was a record for a year without congressional elections. This is usually the worst year in the four-year political cycle, the consultant said. So, if you want to invest in the healthiest form of the advertising economy, ladies and gentlemen, it would be campaign advertising. That's good news for a healthy democracy, don't you think? From President Bush's Veterans Day speech this week, you may have missed this, quote, "I've joined with the veterans groups to call on Congress to protect the flag of the United States in the Constitution of the United States." Pause for applause. In June, the House of Representatives voted for a constitutional amendment to ban flag desecration. I urge the United States Senate to pass this important amendment. Applause. Yes, you and I may not have noticed it, but the epidemic of flag burning, ladies and gentlemen, has gotten the president's attention. I, for one, join Pat Robertson saying thank the good Lord. And now, news from outside the bubble. The U.S.-led coalition failed to plan properly for the aftermath of the war in Iraq. Oh, my God, hold the presses. Stop the presses, and then hold them. That's according to Britain's Foreign Secretary Jack Straw. In an interview published in the New Statesman magazine, the New Statesman magazine, Straw was uncertain whether order would be restored to Iraq within a decade. He said the coalition had not expected the insurgency there to be so ruthless. He thought it would be a nice insurgency. "The implementation after the military action was not as satisfactory as it should have been," Straw was quoted as saying. "More preparation should have been put in, with the benefit of hindsight. None of us thought the insurgency would be that ruthless." Next time, can we have a ruthful insurgency, please? And almost outside the bubble, this from Knight Ridder newspapers. U.S. and Iraqi forces have killed more than 1,300 insurgents in Iraq and detained 9,000 suspected fighters since last January's election. But the estimated size of the insurgency remains the same, according to U.S. military officials. The U.S. military releases only occasional tallies of enemy deaths and has a policy of not releasing a total. Even so, the available numbers compiled from news releases since January and the official estimate of overall insurgent numbers suggest that the forces fighting American soldiers in Iraq have been able to find enough recruits to replace those who've been killed or detained. They're using the slogan, an insurgency of one? No, I don't know. General John Abizade, the chief of U.S. Central Command, who once estimated insurgent strength at 5,000, put the number at 20,000 in early October, about the same as it was a year ago. Insurgents' ranks are being replenished as quickly as they are depleted, says Michael O'Hanlon at the Brookings Institution and co-author of An Iraq Index. It's closer to stalemate militarily than anything else, as best I can tell, he said. In some areas, it's just a matter of getting rid of the leaders, and these generally seem to be replaceable, according to Anthony Cordesman, a former Pentagon official. There's no way to make a qualitative judgment about how important a given leader was. U.S. officials say the insurgents are on the defensive. Weren't they on the ropes a while back? Weren't they the last gasp? Now they're on the defensive. Looks like they're getting... Looks good for them. Over the past year, Vice President Dick Cheney has waged an intense and largely unpublicized campaign to stop Congress, the Pentagon, and the State Department from imposing more restrictive rules on the handling of terrorist suspects. This, according to defense, state, intelligence, and congressional officials speaking to the Washington Post. Last winter, when Senator John Rockefeller, the head of the Democrats on the Senate Intelligence Committee, began pushing to have the full committee briefed on CIA interrogation practices, Cheney called him to the White House to urge that he drop the matter. In recent months, Cheney has been the force against adding safeguards to the Defense Department rules on treatment of military prisoners, putting him at odds with Condoleezza Rice. On a trip to Canada last month, Rice interrupted a packed itinerary to hold a secure video conference with Cheney on detainee policy to make sure no decisions were made without her input. Just last week, Cheney showed up at a Republican senatorial luncheon to lobby lawmakers for a CIA exemption to the McCain Amendment that would ban torture and inhumane treatment of prisoners. The exemption would cover the CIA's covert black sites in Eastern Europe where key Al-Qaeda captives or K-Al-Qaeda captives are being kept or caped. But that's not all Dick Cheney is doing. He's meeting with Ahmed Chalabi, deputy prime minister of Iraq, once a U.S. favorite to replace Saddam Hussein, later accused by the United States of sending sensitive U.S. intelligence, to Iran. Coincidentally, where was Ahmed Chalabi a week ago before he came to Washington to meet with Dick Cheney? That's right, he was in Iran meeting with Iranian officials. Chalabi did refuse to apologize this week for providing the U.S. government with false information on Saddam Hussein before the war, calling charges that he did so an, quote, urban myth, end quote. And the Wall Street Journal reports that there's little sign of progress in the federal investigation of those allegations that he once leaked U.S. intel secrets to Iran. The FBI hasn't interviewed Chalabi himself or many current or former U.S. government officials thought likely to have information related to the matter, according to lawyers for several of those individuals. The investigation of Chalabi remains in the hands of the FBI with little active interest from local federal prosecutors or the Justice Department. There's also been no grand jury involvement in the case. Meantime, of course, the president, as noted earlier, gave that speech on Veterans Day, the first salvo in what's reported to be a blowback by the administration to critics. See, the Democrats decided only 3 years late to start debating the Iraq war, and that's bothering the administration. The administration's poll numbers are down to a record low. There are frequent reports of division among Republicans in Congress, fears by Republicans that association with President Bush may hurt their reelection chances next year. Some Republicans even saying they don't want the president to come in and campaign for them next year. And, of course, the president's much-touted Social Security initiative has now been officially ruled dead for the year and probably for his term. Tough times. Maybe even meriting a phone call.
Hello.
Hey, 4-1. It's Wrinkled Eagle.
You don't have to use the code word 43. You're the one who's calling.
I know. I just like the idea of an extra layer of security these days.
Yeah. Think an extra layer of credibility might be more useful to you right about now, Sprout.
Hey, 43, just wanted to check if you noticed I'm creating distance between myself and the chain gang.
Gee.
Dick Cheney, putting to rest that five-year-old Cunard about him being the real president. You know, by the first of the year, the only top-level policy things he's going to be attending are a cabinet member's funeral.
And he's okay with that?
Oh, me, Padre, this is the great thing about a vice president who doesn't want to run for president. He doesn't really mind what kind of road apples you shovel over him.
Yeah. It's also the great thing about a vice president who isn't qualified to be lieutenant governor. Anywho, saw your Veterans Day speech.
Yeah, going on the offensive, getting back into campaign mode, making the Democrats pay for their critical conditions.
Now, listen, 43, Dick Cheney's not your real problem.
Hey, 4-1, even Karl Rove, when he can find the time to call me, he calls Dick Cheney an albacore around my neck, and you know, that's a very dense fish.
No, that famously dense. Yeah. But Dick Cheney's the only fella besides you elected by the whole country. Elected is, you know, the word.
Yeah.
Your problem is everybody around you who can't claim a mandate from the voters.
Listen, sir, you know there's two things I value above all others. The first one is loyalty, mm-hmm. and the second one is so much like loyalty that I'm
telling you, everybody below the rank of cabinet member should have a signed resignation letter on your desk already.
Yeah.
You should be going through the resumes looking for new blood like a vampire human resources administrator.
Yeah, but sir, Ronald Reagan brought in new blood when he got into trouble with the Iran-Contra dealing.
Well, that's what
Bill Clinton brought in new blood when he had his little thing with the Jewish girl in the sink.
Yeah.
4-1, I'm heavy-footing it on an interstate that just goes one direction, straight ahead. No curves, no turns. That's a little thing called leadership. That's what Mr. Churchill would do.
Mr. Churchill wouldn't have spent his first 5 years more in debt to Dick Cheney than a renter in Trump Tower. But he's the best vice president to distance yourself from, 43, because he's already the most invisible, you know, except for the torture lobbying.
Hey, 4-1 thing about these detainees, mm-hmm. you know, if being kept at an undisclosed location is good enough for Dick Cheney, it's good enough for them. That's from Rush Limbaugh. He sent that over with a quart of pills.
See, get yourself free from that whole Texas mafia deal. Brent Scowcroft is available. Jim Baker.
You know, if Mr. Scowcroft's loyalty to this family was as consistent as your loyalty to him, he'd have half a chance of being considered for Bush 2, Cabinet 3. But look here. This fella thinks he's got to communicate with me through op-eds. If I wanted to read op-eds, I'd know who Joe Wilson is.
Sprout, the polls are dire.
You think I read the polls?
Of course not. Yeah, people who read them for you.
Your point being?
Put it this way. Mm-hmm. Even your father didn't have Republican candidates running away from him for 3+ years.
Well, you weren't reelected. You didn't have 3 years to invest in your vision. A, and you didn't have a vision, B, but aside from that...
43, just based on what we've seen last little while, a president might be better off without a vision.
Oh, sure. Great legacy. While I was in office, nothing moved. That's not what we were called here to do, keep the furniture in place. No, just figuring out how to calibrate a right distance from the chainmaster. See, we're thinking of having the main secure undisclosed location moved out to Virginia.
Well,
or wherever. You know, I forgot you're not cleared for that.
You know, cleared for enough to know this. You keep trying to pin the blame for the war on the company. The place is going to leak like a $4 umbrella. You know, that's one thing that place knows how to do is play defense.
Yeah, I just wanted to bounce off of you the two vision-type directions we're going into re-seize control of the news cycles. One, manned space flight to Mars within 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
The other is vast new tax cuts. I guess you could call it, bold versus bold plus.
Yeah, guess I could. Look, 43, whole lot of folks who haven't drunk the neocon Kool-Aid be happy to come in and help you out if you ask him, or even if you want him, I could do the asking. That's what a father does for him.
You know what a father does for his son? He supports him.
Mm-hmm.
You want new blood, 4-1? We got that. How about the new prime minister of Iraq, Ahmed Chalabi? That blood's about as new as you can get.
Okay, Sprout, you got my support. You got your mother's support, probably.
Well,
whether you make a prudent mid-course adjustment or keep heading straight for that iceberg, either way, we do that love thing for you.
Thanks, 41. That means more than I know.
You got it. Give our love to Laura.
We'll do.
Without my walking stick, I'd go insane. I couldn't look my best. You know I'd feel undressed without my cane. Must have my walking stick, 'cause it may rain. When it pours, can't be outdoors without my cane. Well, if I ever left my house without my walking stick, it would be something I could never explain. Ah, the thing that makes me click on Lover's Lane would go for naught if I were caught without my cane. I couldn't look my best. You know I'd feel undressed without my cane. Must have my walking stick, 'cause it may rain. When it pours, can't be outdoors without my cane. Well, if I ever left my house without my walking stick, oh, it would be something I could never explain. Ah, the thing that makes me click on Lover's Lane would go for nothing if I were caught without my cane. Yeah, the thing that makes me click on Lover's Lane would go for naught, I say for naught, would go for naught if I were caught without my cane. Without my cane. Without my cane.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, around the world via your computer at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. A free download at www.audible.com/Le Show. Channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, and a free podcast. What am I talking about? At KCRW.com. It'd be just like me not having to rush through this if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you really? All right. Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. The show playlist available at harryshearer.com. Welcome back, Opus. By the way, my observations on my revisit, my return to New Orleans, are available at www.huffingtonpost.com/eatthepress. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.